welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour, we deliver adventure from two programs. Later on, it's Dangerous Assignment, but right now, the Armed Forces Radio Service program, Douglas of the World, produced exclusively for the troops overseas at the time, with radio actors back in the States, including Jack Moyles and Harry Bartell. This episode called The Terrorist from 1953.
Douglas of the World. Douglas of the World. International intrigue. Jack Moyles as Brad Douglas, foreign correspondent. This week's adventure, The Terrorists.
Oh, good morning, sir.
I received your note about an especially fine rug at a reasonable price. I am Karim Allah.
Of course. Come with me. Azim. Azim.
I come.
We have it hung from a wall rack right here. There. Is it not beautiful?
Exquisite.
Azim, go behind the rack. Turn it so Karim Allah may better see the richness of the colors.
Lovely. Lovely. But it's probably too costly.
For a well-paid petroleum engineer? Azim, now!
Careful. The rug, it's falling.
Hit him. Hey, good.
Now wrap him in the rug and take him out the back door.
It's heavy.
Fat with the meat and bread of the West.
Hello, Paris office, the New York World. Yes, Mr. Shaughnessy, we'll see you tomorrow morning at 11.
Hello there, beautiful.
Hello, Brad.
Mike said he wanted to see me right away.
Sit down. Now, your ticket is waiting at the Air France office. Your plane leaves at 8:30 p.m.
Air France?
How else would you get to Tehran? By way of Nice, Monte Carlo, and the Riviera? No, none of that. You'll get there as fast and as economically as possible.
Iran, huh? Middle East. Danger spot of the world, our distinguished competitor, the Times, called it.
Oh, so you want to do a general survey, is that it? Well, I'm telling you that I'm sick to death of general surveys. I want a story on Mohammad Mossadegh.
Mossadegh? Became premier of Iran in April of 51, leader of the Nationalist Front Party, author of the Oil Nationalization Act, dispossessed the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, married, five kids.
And a highly dramatic and emotional personality.
Well, since we know all about
him. Why not write the story here, huh? Well, I'll tell you why not. I'm not in the market for just another one of those bare-bones biographies. I want real living characterizations. Mossadegh fought successfully to get Russian troops out of Iran in 46. He took it right to the United Nations and they backed him up. Aha, that was courage. The very same man says he believes in Iran for Iranians one day, and the next swears by everything that he wants the friendship of the West and is ready to cooperate all the way to get it and keep it. Now, what makes him speak in contradictions, eh? What makes him tick?
Well, maybe expediency.
What do the readers of the world want to know about Mossadegh? They want to know how his actions are going to affect them right in New York, USA. And how is Brad Douglas going to be able to tell them that? By finding out what the taxi driver in Tehran thinks of Mossadegh. Is the shoemaker in the bazaar for or against him? What does the Kurdish herdsman think? Yes, and the oil worker who lost a good job in Abadan. All right, Brad, go to it. Get that story. Write it with plenty of heart, you see? With the flavor of the country itself.
Then you do believe the oil crisis is bad for you.
Well, I make less money.
How do you feel about Mossadegh?
He's right. People want our oil, let them pay us a fair price.
Hey, you better pull over.
It is merely the police chasing the Tudor. They were outlawed after trying to assassinate the Shah, but they are still active.
Well, pull over before they kill us.
They are gone, and your hotel is in the next block.
Who are these Tudor?
The local communists. By terror and lawlessness, they hope to strip us of our friends and make us easy prey for their masters in Moscow. But they have forgotten Mohammed Mossadegh, We ran them out in 46. He is a tough man. Nobody pushes him around. He would have made a fine taxi driver. Here we are, sir.
Oh, thanks. Here, a little extra for giving me your opinion.
Oh, a blessing for you. Do you stay in Tehran long?
For a few days, maybe a week.
Watch yourself. Watch yourself.
You have a reservation for Brad Douglas?
Mr. Douglas, welcome. Oh, I have been expecting you. I have a fine room with a view of the Khyabern Kalkh, the Avenue of Palaces. Boy, front and center, take Mr. Douglas' luggage to 344. Oh, Mr. Douglas, I admire very much your article about Tito.
Oh, you read the world?
Oh, someday I hope to become a newspaper writer myself. I study English diligently.
Well, that's fine. If I can help, let me know.
I have so far found a rich source of idiomatic speech in your comic books. Oh, Lil Abner and Mommy Yoakum I like very much.
You read Dick Tracy and Superman?
Yes, yes, but the quaint speech of Mommy Yoakum intrigues me particularly. Only one thing. Why are they called comic?
Well, I guess they started out to be funny, but nothing in this world seems to stay funny for long.
Oh, it is very true. Ah, you're here to write of the tragedy of Iran, I suppose.
About your premier Mossadegh and his Nationalist Front Party.
Mossadegh would rather see the ruin of Iran than give it to the British. The pipelines are empty. The big refinery is idle. The oil for free people lies under the earth. The common people suffer for the pride of the few. The Russians smile and wait. It is almost unhappy.
Hey, that girl over there, the pretty one.
Where? Oh, the one with the excellent figure and beckoning eyes?
Yeah, she's been giving me the green light, unless I'm crazy.
Oh, ever since she heard me call you out your name to the bellboy.
What do you know? Usually I'm the type the girls pass by. Ah,
she is very lovely. If I were you, I would take the chance.
Yeah, she's by herself.
We have a splendid dining room with a respectable wine list. An excellent background for improving such a moment.
Good idea.
I wish only I were a big writer with such an opportunity. Call upon me for anything. My name is Petros.
Well, wish me luck, Petros. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Douglas.
May I sit down?
Please do. I heard the clerk speak your name.
Then you must have heard him recommend the dining room.
No, that's where you lowered your voice. Oh, pardon me. I am Nadia Allah.
Well, I'm delighted to meet you. Petros recommended the dining room as a fine place for two people to get acquainted.
Petros is right.
Then you'll have lunch with me?
I shall be delighted. This is your first visit to Tehran?
Right now, I'm hoping it'll be the first of many.
You are the Douglas who is the famous American journalist?
I'm here to do a story about your prime minister, but let's not talk about that now.
Good afternoon. A table for two.
You are still serving lunch, I hope.
Until 2:30, sir. Right this way, please.
Oh, no, not there. Can't we take this booth?
If you desire it, miss. Perhaps a drink of something before you order, sir?
A wine would be perfect.
Yes, to celebrate. Let's see.
We have several excellent luncheon sherries.
Good. Two sherries. Well, I can say one thing. I never had a better reception in any city.
You are very gallant. I, too, shall remember this meeting.
You mean it?
I would not say so if I didn't.
Maybe we ought to change the order to champagne.
No, sherry is more quiet. It signifies less gaiety, perhaps, but much more sincerity.
You will enjoy this. A medium dry wine of rich body.
Huh. Well, here's to Nadia. Plenty of sincerity.
And to Brad Douglas. Oh, it's no use. I can't do it, I can't.
Hey, what's the matter?
I can't go on pretending romance. I spoke to you because I need help desperately.
Oh, just when I was figuring myself for quite a guy. Well, here I am, every girl's big brother. Okay, what is it?
My brother disappeared yesterday morning.
Want to call the police?
I have, but I can't sit here and wait when he may be in real danger. I thought a man of your reputation, a prominent businessman.
Tell me all about it.
Karim, my brother, is a petroleum engineer. He has been at home ever since the Abadan refinery closed.
He worked at Abadan?
For nearly 10 years. Yesterday, he went to the bazaar to look at a special rug. Collecting Persian rugs is his hobby. He never came back.
Mm-hmm. The police checked the rug merchants?
He went to a certain one. The police went there, but the proprietor had never heard of Karim Allah.
Oh, that's bad. Maybe we ought to go down there now, pay them a surprise visit.
You will do this for me after I tricked you to get your help?
I'll find him for you if I can.
Then, if you still wish, we will improve our acquaintance later. We will dine together. From what Karim said, that looks like the place.
Did your brother happen to tell you anything about the rug he was going to see?
I didn't listen too closely because I do not care for ornate things, but it seems to me it was a kashan. Yes, one with a central pattern of a hunting scene. You know, hunters riding to the chase.
Come on. Now let me start the talk.
Yes.
Good afternoon. You would like to see the fine rugs?
Yes, we're looking for something unusual.
Something you cannot find in America, perhaps?
Yeah, that's right.
I see. This way, please. Hassan, these people seek a fine rug.
You have come to the right place. This one here on this wall rack, it required the nimble fingers of many girls for over a year in its creation. In America, it would cost $10,000.
Oh, what's that picture in the center supposed to represent?
It is a classic scene. Gods and goddesses dancing to the pipes of Pan.
Greek mythology in a Persian garden. That is unusual. But it isn't exactly what I had in mind. Would you happen to have a kashan with a hunting scene on it?
Oh, such a rug is rare and most difficult to find. But do take another look at this one. Azim, go behind the rack. Turn it so the American gentleman may better see the richness of the colors.
Yes, Hassan. I go.
There. Look upon it, sir. Gaze upon the vitality of its coloring. Azim, now!
Brad, look out the rug!
Azim, quick, he is strong! Again! Azim, you will need at least two to help carry them out. You will wait in there.
Take it easy.
Oh, my head. It aches.
Mine too.
It's like midnight in here. I can't see a thing. Well,
close your eyes and count to 10.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
All right, open.
Yes, it is better. Brad.
Somebody over in the corner. Lying on a cot.
Who is it?
Karim.
Who is it?
Karim.
Nadia.
What have they done to you?
I'm not so bad. A little bruised is all. Who's this with you? How did you find me?
This is Brad Douglas, a friend who helped me look for you.
But how did you alert the guards outside the house?
I'm sorry, but we didn't elude a thing. We went to the bazaar and fell for the same rug trick you did.
I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. I wish you hadn't tried to find me. Now they shall kill all three of us. They would have murdered me before this, except I refused to sign the paper.
A paper?
A note saying I was attacked by National Front people because I once worked for the British.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight.
We are prisoners of the terrorists. Ever since the British left, the Tudeh have tried to start a reign of terror. They take their orders from Moscow.
Seems a little funny that they'd pick an obscure citizen like you.
I assure you, there's nothing funny about it.
Well, if they're shooting at such high stakes, why not snatch somebody important?
Many small people add up to an issue of importance. Besides, I work for the British. The Tudeh makes it seem as though Mossadegh and the National Front people are deliberately terrorizing former Abadan employees. It's bound to widen the break between the government and the West.
Yeah, maybe that does add up. If we could get out of here and expose these people.
There is a chance. Karim, I reported your disappearance to the police. They'll be looking for you.
They won't find us alive, Nadia. Only I had some idea of where we are, but I was unconscious when they brought me here.
I tried to keep track from the moment they hauled me out of the bazaar. See, we traveled south.
Yes.
We did a lot of twisting and turning through what seemed like narrow streets.
Ah, the old section of the city.
It's a maze of winding streets and old houses. Take the police years to search each one.
No, but then we left the winding streets and traveled on a straight road. It was a good road because there weren't many bumps, and the driver speeded up.
For how long did you travel this road?
Oh, I'd say about 5 miles.
We're on the main south highway.
The one that leads to the shrines at Rajas. If we could only get word to someone where to find us, if we wrote a note, threw it out a window.
How, Nadia, how? If you look about, you'll see that there are no windows in his room. Here they come. As the Americans say, this is it.
Zim, bring the light and the other things. Perhaps by now you all have some idea of why you are here, my unwilling guests. No doubt you have been speculating about your fate. To speak out plainly, you all shall die before this night becomes morning. That is, unless Mr. Brad Douglas is willing to cooperate with me.
How did you find out who I was?
The morning paper has your picture and a story of your disappearance with a beautiful Terran girl. I had no idea of your importance when Azim and I were forced to take you into custody. It seems we have captured a plum pigeon indeed.
Shall I put the paper and pen on the table?
Not yet. We must have the consent of Mr. Douglas.
Don't beat around the bush. What do you want?
As a prominent American journalist, you can be of great assistance to our cause. You can also gain your release and that of your two friends.
Go on, I'm listening.
If you were to write a dispatch in your own vigorous style saying that you were cruelly assaulted by Nationalist Front terrorists...
You'd like people to believe Mossadegh hates Americans.
Exactly. I have a phrase you might use. Say that he looks upon Americans as merely Britons without monocles.
Well, suppose I write this story for you. What's to prevent me from repudiating it later?
Leave that to us.
Okay. But I don't write too well in the dark. Leave a light, huh?
Azim, also leave paper and pen. Mr. Douglas, will an hour be enough time for you to compose this dispatch?
I think so.
Good. You may not believe this, but I am happy you are a reasonable man. Thus, I am not forced into more violence. Come, Azim. We will return in an hour. I shall look forward to reading your dispatch.
You're not serious. You won't write what they want.
He said he'd let us go.
You can't believe that. It doesn't matter whether you write what he wants or not. We'll still be murdered.
Maybe not. There may be a chance he'll keep his word.
Brad's right. It's our only hope.
Then I would rather die immediately than be guilty of helping them. It would not be part of the ruin of my country. The government's bound to overcome the 2 days soon. Then Mossadegh and the oil company will eventually come to some agreement, something that's fair to both sides.
How about us being fair to ourselves? Let's get out of here any way we can.
Not by adding to the lies the 2 days spread. Even if you should later repudiate this erroneous story, the evil impression it originally created would remain in many minds. Do we want to becloud the truth? Do we want people to forget that Mossadegh acts in the interests of Iran as he sees them? Should we say he's against the British and the Americans? No. Mossadegh wishes only a membership in the free world for a free Iran.
That's your opinion or somebody else's?
Mine. But also, I believe it's the opinion of the true Iranian patriots.
Well, it's all very interesting, but I still think I'll write that dispatch.
If you do, I shall be ashamed of you. I should be sorry for you.
Is it ready?
I'm just signing my name. There it is. All yours.
It's good. Excellent. Mr. Douglas, you have a fine, hard-driving style. It has the glitter and polish of an expensive diamond.
It says what you want?
It does. But occasionally there are references to names I find unfamiliar. American names like Dick and Abner.
Oh, it's simply color for Americans to read. They expect it of me.
Very well. But the ending I find inconclusive. For such an interesting story, that is a flaw. Otherwise, it could be called a masterpiece of journalistic prose. I think I have it. Yes. Give me the pen, please. One sentence will do it. If this terror should go on, bodies, victims of the cruelty of the National Front terrorists, will litter our streets, and then only a miracle can save Iran. Sign that.
Sorry, I don't like it.
But it is a proper ending.
Well, for emphasis, add after streets, even the road to the shrines at Rajas.
Yes. Yes, that is good. That is very good.
You've used terror and terrorist in the same sentence.
Very well, I accept the alteration. I'll say National Front gangsters instead.
Hmm. And instead of only a miracle, make it only a Superman can save Iran.
I see. Another Americanism for your readers.
Hmm? All right. I'll sign it. Mm-hmm. There you are. Now, my newspaper has no office in Tehran. If you want the story printed without delay, give it to Petros at my hotel. He'll wire it in.
There will be no delays. You are sure?
I'll write him a note. That'll speed it up. Dear Petros, the bearer of this note is a friend who has gone to a lot of trouble to bring this to you. He's done a lot for me, up to and including the double whammy. Rush story out for me. Yeah, that ought to do it.
Double whammy? What does that mean?
Oh, the best, the works, everything.
Oh, double whammy. Thank you. Thank you very much. You have been so cooperative that it hurts me to say what I have to say. You must die after all. You must die to add final impact to the story you yourself have written. At dawn, beside the Rogers Road.
The dirty, double-dealing rat.
What did I tell you? All your subservience wanted to gain for you. At least you might have retained your honor, your dignity.
Karim, stop. Brad tried to save us. He did all he could, and I'm sorry I got him into this. Brad, I hope you'll forgive me.
Well, we're still alive. We still have a chance. I had another reason for writing the story. I tried to put in a clue. I only hope that Petros catches it.
Oh, when you change those words?
The only thing we can do is go ahead on the theory that he'll understand and send the police to save us. What we'll need is time.
We have the night ahead. A miserable, terrible night. And I apologize if I misjudged you.
How many men do you think Hassan will bring with him in the morning?
Perhaps six. He'll kill us outside where our bodies can be found beside the road.
Well, we're going to have to create a delay along about dawn. When they come to take us to the car, we'll go along peaceably. But when they get us to the road, it'll be different all of a sudden. Karim, you and I, we'll jump them. We'll wade in with both hands and both feet. We'll battle them until we can't fight another lick. If we can get 5 minutes, it might be enough.
I'm not good with my fists. For once in my life, I regret it.
Well, do the best you can.
I shall. I promise.
Nadia, you stay clear of it.
No, I'll fight, too. Perhaps I can add a few seconds of precious time.
Mr. Douglas, it is only fair to tell you, I changed your dispatch.
You did what?
I functioned as editor. Your correction was not right. I changed only a Superman can save Iran back to only a miracle. It is better that way.
Well, it's too late to do anything more about it now.
Azim, watch. We are nearly there.
You're going to kill me and Karim. Is it necessary to kill the girl, too? Can't you let her go free?
Oh, I am sorry. If I spared her, my life would be in grave danger. I would also have to surrender my rug business at the bazaar. Azim, stop the car. You will please get out, all of you.
Back, with your hands above your heads.
Walk over this way. I said this way.
Hurry, wait in.
Look out, Brad, a knife.
And Zim, Zan, quick, grab his arm.
Karim, help. Hold him. Hold him down.
There. Now my gun, quickly.
Oh, listen.
For police. Quick, run for it. Run.
We made it. We bought the extra time. Petros, it's the understatement of the year, but I'm sure glad to be back in your hotel.
Oh, when I read your note using Mami Yokum's celebrated phrase, the double whammy, I knew immediately you were in trouble. After the men who brought the story left, I scanned through it. I was aware of your similes in which you compare terrorists to Dick Tracy characters, but I could not find out where you were until I saw your reference to the Rogers Road.
Well, we didn't need Superman after all.
Superman?
I had a reference to him that I was sure you'd get right away. Only Hassan eliminated it.
Petros, you are a clever and resourceful man.
Thank you.
Well, I've written the real story. I'd like you both to listen to the last paragraph, since it concerns your country. Today, Iran shares the tension we find throughout the free world. Iran wants to keep her identity, her freedom. This is impossible without the friendship of the West. Iran desires friendly relations with all nations, and she's determined to resist aggression, come what may.
Oh, it says what I feel. It is good.
I have brought news. Hassan was captured by the police. They're hunting for the others.
I'm still wondering why he didn't kill us at the very last.
He was afraid to have the police see him in the act of murder.
In case of saving himself for further misdeeds.
Probably. Now, if you'll excuse us, Nadia and I are having dinner together.
Well, fine. If you don't mind, I'll join you.
This time, we do mind. Come on, Brad.
I know the place. The finest shish kebab in all Tehran. Petros can call a cab.
Carry him.
It isn't far. And...
Carry him?
And...
Come on, Nadia.
Brad, I've never seen anything like it. Karim's usually so persistent. And you stopped him with only a look.
Only a look? My dear Nadia, that was the triple whammy.
Douglas of the World. Bill Woodson speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Douglas of the World on Tuned to Yesterday, an Armed Forces Radio Service recording released for broadcast in 1953. You're listening to an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Next, more espionage and intrigue from the Dangerous Assignment series from the same year, 1953. The network broadcasts released by NBC live on the air, though transcribed, featured movie actor Brian Dunleavy in the lead. But when the series went into syndication in 1953, actor Lloyd Beryl took up the task of playing Steve Mitchell on his dangerous assignment. This next broadcast brings us to London.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Beryl as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though. Trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to prove that sometimes the guy who tries to take somebody for a ride ends up getting taken. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
The Blue Lion has sent us another guest, Steve.
The Blue Lion?
Mm-hmm. Pub in London. Actually, on a tip, we arrested a man on his arrival here last night. His passport and other identification were forged. He's the fifth illegal entry we've picked up in a month.
So how does the Blue Lion fit into the picture?
And that's where these people picked up their phony passports. They don't know or won't tell us any more than that.
I guess that calls for a visit to the Blue Lion, huh?
Mm-hmm. Scotland Yard's given the place a clean bill of health, Steve. The owners are well-known, respectable, and I doubt that the man behind this racket is still using the place as a rendezvous since so many of his clients have been arrested.
Any other leads, Commissioner?
A very slim one, Steve. Our forger is a master penman, very clever, been in the business for years. We don't know who he is, but his work is, shall we say, distinctive. A trained eye of an expert can spot his artwork immediately.
This is a lead?
Several days ago, a crew of workmen found a small package behind some loose bricks in the basement of a house on St. Margaret's Mews in London. The package, wrapped in newspaper, contained half a dozen forged passports.
Identified as our friend's work?
Right.
I see. So if I can find out who put that package there, I might find our master pen.
Exactly.
And the date on that newspaper, Commissioner?
Brace yourself, Steve. April 29th. 1945.
You mean that package was hidden away all that time?
Right. I know it's a long shot and a cold trail, but we've nothing else to go on. Get over there, Steve. Check with Inspector Jellicoe of Scotland Yard. Find out what you can about that house in St. Margaret's Mews. Pick up the trail and nail the man who's running this passport racket. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
I've got my assignment. Get over to London and track down a master penman who's running a flourishing racket in phony passport. And all I have to start with is a package wrapped in an old newspaper. A package that was found hidden away in the basement of an old house. It's late Thursday afternoon when my plane lands. I head for Scotland Yard and the office of Inspector Jellicoe.
Here's a brief history of the house, Mr. Mitchell. A list of occupants and owners, past and present.
Look, Inspector, about the newspaper, the wrapping on the package that was found in the basement.
Yes, I have it just in here, Mr. Mitchell.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Is there any possibility the package might have been hidden away in the house during, say, the past year?
Hardly. You see, Mr. Mitchell, the house in St. Margaret's Mews was severely damaged during the war years. A good deal of repair work was done in the basement in the latter part of 1945. New walls, reinforcements, and so on.
I see. And the package was found behind the new construction work.
That's right.
Exactly when did this repair job begin, do you know?
Well, let me see now. Yes, here we are. The work was begun in August of 1945.
And this newspaper is dated April 45. Well, that narrows it down to roughly 3 months when it could have been put there. I wonder why the package wasn't removed during that time. Why he didn't come back for it.
Well, it's hard to say.
Who owned the house then, Inspector?
No, it's in the report here. Let me see. Ah, yes, it's Ian Mackay, second cousin of Sir John Stoker.
Lived there alone?
He was with the Royal Air Force at the time, living at the house with his wife, Emily, two youngsters, Ronald and Valerie.
Any servants?
Yeah, three. An elderly couple named Denny, a maid named Clara Fitzsimmons.
Where are they now, do you know?
Well, Ian Mackay was killed in a plane crash in 1946. His wife remarried 3 years later and is now living in Canada. The children are with her. The Dennys are both dead. And as for the maid Clara, well, we haven't been able to track her down yet.
Who could have had access to that basement other than the people living in the house?
Anyone in the whole of London, Mr. Mitchell.
What?
Yes. You see, it was used for a time as an air raid shelter.
Oh, great. Well, let's get back to the item you were wondering about, Inspector. Why was the package stashed away there in the first place? Any ideas?
Well, let's examine this possibility. The person carrying the package believes he's being followed.
The police, and he doesn't want to get caught with the evidence on him.
Yes, so he slips into the air raid shelter. It's deserted. He finds a place to hide the package, slips out again.
This piece of newspaper seems to back up that line of thinking, Inspector.
Oh, you've noticed that, have you?
Yeah, sure. Here we have a single sheet torn from the rest of the newspaper, and what is it? Part of the want ad section. Up at the top of the page is the tail end of the column Rooms to Let.
Indicating that our friend, aware he was being followed, was seeking a change of address. You'll notice the last 6 listings in that column have London addresses, and there are some pencil marks beside them.
It'd be too much to expect to find him still living in one of these rooming houses after all these years. They might give me a lead.
That's right.
I'll take a crack at it, Inspector. You have any plans?
I thought I'd drop round to the Blue Lion Inn, check with the man I have there, and then go on trying to track down that maid of the Mackays, Clara Fitzsimmons.
Good idea. See you later, Inspector. The odds on our long shot are growing, and the chances I'll find the gent I'm after look slimmer by the minute as I start out with my list of addresses. The first one is a bust. Same goes for the next address and the next. Things must have been tough in April. 4 down and 2 to go. Now it starts to rain. I rush on to the next place, 61 New Romney Road. The landlady, a rather large one, greets me at the door. There's a pleasant air about her. And that air includes a faint trace of gin. She invites me to the parlor, and I settle down into a heavy, overstuffed chair.
1945, you say? Well, now, dearie, that's going to take a bit of thinking, I'm afraid.
You don't keep a record of your boarders, Mrs. Farland?
Never bother to. Might I offer you a little nip of something? I always have a small glass before supper. Helps the appetite, you know.
Well, thanks, but I'll skip this round if you don't mind.
It also takes the chill out of one's bones. Oh, it's nasty weather out, isn't it, dearie?
Yes, so it is. Now, about this advertisement, Mrs. Farland, that appeared in the paper on April 29th, 1945.
Well, I don't seem to recall it at the moment, but if you say so.
Here's a copy of the paper.
Oh, yes. So I see. So I see. 1945. Oh, we'd had it proper, if you know what I mean. 45 was a nasty year. It was dreadful. Them nasty bombers overhead day and night.
I'm trying to locate a man who might have answered this ad, Mrs. Fallon.
But that was several years ago, dear.
Oh, I know. It's going back a long time, but there's something in the back page of this paper that might spark your memory. It's a continuation of a story regarding Mussolini.
Oh, him. What about him?
He was killed at Lake Como the day before, April
28th, 1945. Was he really?
That's right. Help any?
Of course it does. I remember it clear as crystal, I do. Stella and a young man were supping with us. They just got married.
Stella?
One of me roomers. Been with me for 5 years and enough. No, now. It was Stella's room was advertised in the papers. Of course it was. It all comes back to me now. I rented the room the very next day.
And do you recall who took that room, Mrs. Farland?
Oh, I'll never forget it, dearie. Never. It was a gent named Pinto. Jaeger's Pinto. Oh, I'm a good judge of character and all that, dearie, but Mr. Pinto was my first mistake.
Oh, what happened?
The police came for that nasty little twerp the day after he'd moved in.
What?
That's right. With his fine manners and all, he turned out to be a common burglar. Smash and grab man, you know. He got 5 years, as I understand.
Thanks, Mrs. Farland. That's all I wanted to know.
What was that name again, Mr. Mitchell?
Jaeger's Pinto, Inspector. He was picked up at 61 New Romney Road on May 1st, 1945. Smash and grab artist.
Served 5 years. That could explain why the package wasn't picked up from the basement. His present address is 924 Bexhill Place.
Hey, how'd you know that?
I've been checking up on your Mr. Pinto through quite another lead. You see, I've found Clara Fitzsimmons.
The maid who worked for the people who had the house on St. Margaret's Mews in 1945?
That's right. She's a barmaid now, and her married name is Mrs. Jaeger Pinto.
Oh, brother. Hey, wait a minute. Did you say barmaid?
I did.
And just where is she working?
Can't you guess?
Yeah. The same pub where those people we arrested picked up their phony passports. The Blue Lion Inn.
Right.
Ten minutes later, Inspector Jellicoe picks me up in his car, and we roll out to 924 Bexhill Place, present address of our long-lost friend, Jaeger's Pinto. Stops raining as we pull up in front. We go inside, and the landlord gives us the room number we want. Then, just as we start up the stairs...
Hey, someone's shooting.
Come on, right. Came from upstairs somewhere.
Back home, it sounded like.
Yeah.
Look. There on the floor.
Whoever handled that gun hit the bullseye.
I hope it isn't.
Turn him over. We'll take a look in it.
Yes.
Looks like we're going to have an audience.
Now, the other boarders, no doubt. Look, keep back, everyone. No need to come too close.
Here, now, what's all that blinking racket about?
Lordy. He's been done in.
Who are you?
Cathcart's the name, sir. Sam Cathcart.
You one of the tenants here?
Bet I am. Blimey.
Will you please go downstairs, Mr. Cathcart? All of you, go downstairs and wait there. We'll be down to question you in a moment. Now, go along.
Yes, sir. Blimey. Done in right under our noses.
Well, Inspector, you recognize him?
Yes, Mitchell. He matches the picture I have of him. It's Jaeger's Pinto, and he's been murdered.
Inspector. Petra and I set up headquarters in the parlor and got ready to question the boarders. While we waited for the first one to be brought in, the inspector said,
What do you think about it, Mitchell? Was Pinto the man you wanted?
I don't reckon so, Inspector. I figure now that Pinto was not the passport forger. He was probably just his leg man.
I agree. The forger is also the killer, I'd say.
He killed Pinto to shut his mouth.
Yes. Well, let's hope we get something from the other boarders. Something that will... Come in. Oh, Cathcart, come in. Sit down.
Yes, sir. Blimey, this is awful, Inspector. The two of us was having a pint of beer up in his room not more than a few minutes before.
Pinto's room?
Yes. There was a knock on the door. Pinto went and opened it.
Who was it?
I didn't see. I was sitting on the other side of the room. I heard Pinto say, "Oh, it's you." Then he stepped out into the hall and closed the door. Well, I sat there several minutes, then, just as I was about to go and see what had happened to him, blimey, I heard the shot. I ran outside and down to the back hall, and there was you two gents bending over his body. Phew, didn't I get a shock? I didn't. Blimey.
The person who knocked on the door, Mr. Cathcart, did he say anything at all to Pinto?
Not a word as I could hear, sir.
Oh. Then you don't know whether it was a man or a woman.
That I don't.
Very well, Mr. Cathcart, that'll be all. Oh, please ask the constable to send to the next person.
Righto. Poor Pinto. Blimey.
Yes. Blimey. Well, he tells a straightforward story. Be interesting to know if it also happens to be a true one.
Right now, that looks like anybody's guess.
Come in.
You wish to see me, Inspector?
Yes. Your name, please.
Walter Michaels. I'm an insurance solicitor. I was calling on a client of mine whose room is on the third floor, Mr. Johns, but he didn't answer the door.
Johns? Let's see. The landlord informed me that Mr. Johns had left the house for the railway station half an hour or so before the killing on a business trip.
I say, what's the meaning of this? You've no right to prevent me, you know?
Sounds like a bit of a row out in the hall.
I'll take a look. What seems to be the trouble?
Eh? Oh, this policeman will simply not allow me to go upstairs to my room. It's ridiculous.
Your name?
Johns, but I don't see what business...
Will you step in here a moment, please, Mr. Johns?
Well, all right. You'll even tug at my sleeve. I'm out of shape with the damp as it is. Come.
Sorry. This is Mr. Johns, Inspector.
How do you do?
What sort of foolishness is this, Inspector?
Oh, just routine questioning, Mr. Johns. If you'll just put your topcoat on that chair...
Look here, I'm in a most frightful hurry. Can't I make you understand that? I was almost to the railroad station when I realized that I'd forgotten some important papers, so I hurried back. Now your man tells me I can't even go up to my room to get them. Since when has it
been...
Do
you see, there's been a murder, Mr. Johns.
I said, since when has it been... A murder? Quick, Scott.
Mr. Johns, you haven't said hello to your insurance solicitor here.
My what?
Mr. Michaels here. He says you're a client of his. He called on you while you were out.
What are you talking about?
Aren't you a client of his?
You see, gentlemen,
of course I'm not a client of his. I've never seen the man before in my life.
What's that?
Well, well. How now, Mr. Michaels?
Gentlemen, if I could speak to you in private.
By all means, Mr. Michaels. Oh, that'll be all for now, Mr. Johns. But I shall have to ask you to remain in the city and keep us posted as to your whereabouts for the time being.
What? But my trip...
Your trip will have to wait.
But it's a business trip. Now, see here, you have no right to...
That will be all, Mr. Johns.
I shall speak to your superiors.
Fine. I shall be glad to make an appointment for you.
You... He... Oh!
Sounds like my old college yell.
Quite. And now, Mr. Michaels?
Johns is right. We're not acquainted at all.
So we gathered.
You see, I really came here to see Dora Mays. She has the room across the hall from Johns.
Your girlfriend?
Yes. We had quite a row last night about my family. I had an appointment tonight to thrash the whole thing out, but she didn't show up.
So you came here to her room?
Yes, but she was out. And that's where I was when I heard the scream.
Why didn't you tell us this at first, Mr. Michaels?
I was afraid it would get back to my family.
I see.
You chaps don't seem convinced, but that's my story. Take it or leave it.
Before we take it, Michaels, we'll check it. But Michael's girlfriend, Doris Mays, still isn't back, so for the time being, there's no way of checking up on his story. I'll leave Inspector Jellicoe at the rooming house to continue the questioning. I borrow a police car and head for Mrs. Pinto's flat to break the news to her about her husband's murder.
I always knew somehow he'd end up like this. I guess that's why I left him.
You were separated?
It's been a year now.
I see. Mrs. Pinto, as I understand it, you were a maid in the house on St. Margaret's Mews back in 1945.
That's right. That was where I first knew Pinto, before we were married.
Did he come to the house very often then?
He used to come to see me. Then one night he told me some wild story that he was some sort of government agent and was being chased by Nazi spies.
Brother, what a story.
I believed him. I was young and silly then. I let him hide down in the basement.
So that's when he ditched the package of phony passports.
What's that?
Oh, nothing. Go on.
Next morning, he was gone. Later, I learned he'd been arrested and sent to jail. As soon as he was out, he looked me up. I just started as barmaid at the Blue Lion then. He promised to turn over a new leaf, so we got married.
But it didn't last very long, huh?
I found out he was still mixed up in something shady, so I left him. A year ago, as I said.
Did you see anything of him after that?
Oh, yes. He'd drop in every now and then at the Blue Lion.
But to see you?
That's what he said.
Well, maybe to carry on the business he was mixed up in. Well, what next?
Well, just a few days ago, the police were around making inquiries. I didn't say anything about Pinto, after all. He was still my husband.
You happen to know any of his friends?
No. I can't say I wanted to.
He ever mention the man or woman he worked for?
Well, there was a gent he always used to turn to when he needed a bob or two. Tracer was his name, I think.
Tracer?
The old Tracer will fix me up, he always used to say.
Hey, wait a minute. Tracer was probably a nickname, and it could sure fit a passport forger. That's probably the boy I'm after. Did you ever see him?
Not that I know. Pinto used to talk to him over the telephone, mostly.
Did you ever answer the phone when he called?
Oh, yes.
You think you might recognize his voice?
I might.
Is there a phone here?
No, but there's a phone box down the street.
Come on. I want to call the inspector and have him line up all the suspects for you to listen to. Mrs. Pinto puts on a coat and we go outside. I step into the phone box and the little light goes on. Just as I start to dial a number, I spot a glint of metal across the street. I hit the floor fast. I dive outside, but there's no one in sight across the street. Nothing but the mouth of an alley and the sound of some distant running steps. I could never catch up to him now.
Mr. Mitchell.
You okay, Mrs. Pinto?
Yes, sir. I jumped into this doorway when it happened.
Okay, come on. I've got a police car down the street and...
What is it?
Mrs. Pinto, you told me you hadn't been out of your flat all evening, didn't you?
Yes, that's right.
Earlier this evening, while we were looking for Pinto, it started to rain.
Well, what about it?
It rained for just about half an hour. It stopped just as Inspector Jellicoe and I arrived at Pinto's rooming house.
I don't see what all this is
your
got to do with...
Your coat sleeve is damp, Mrs. Pinto.
Why,
you didn't tell me the truth. You were out of your flat this evening during the time it rained.
But... Yes, I was.
Where'd you go?
I started for Pinto's rooming house to tell him the police were making inquiries about him. Halfway there, I changed my mind. I came back.
You sure you didn't go to the rooming house?
Quite sure.
Hey, hold everything. The damp sleeve.
What about it? I told you.
Yeah, you just told me the answer. I take Mrs. Pinto back to her flat and tell her to lock herself in. Then I go outside and slide behind the wheel of the borrowed police car, just in time to feel a gun barrel nudge me in the back of the neck. Well, well. That would be Mr. Johns, I presume.
Quite right, Mitchell. Keep looking straight ahead.
Okay. So you're the big cheese of the passport racket.
Start the car.
If you insist.
Straight down the street. I'll tell you where to turn.
You've been waiting for me here ever since you took that shot at me in front of Mrs. Pinto's, huh, Johns?
Yes, I doubled around the block.
And I walked right into a trap. Afraid Inspector Jellicoe won't have a very good opinion of me.
That won't trouble you for long. Turn here.
Gilbert Place. Where are we heading?
A quiet room where you're going to phone Mrs. Pinto and have her join us.
Ah, get rid of both of us, huh?
Right. You may have seen me occasionally in the Blue Lion, and she's heard my voice over the phone. Can't afford to have her around. Left here.
Epping Square. This where the quiet room is?
Just keep driving. You'll find out presently. Mitchell, you knew it was me in the car as soon as you felt the gun barrel. How?
When you put on the act about storming back to the rooming house for some forgotten papers, I remembered the sleeve to your suit was damp. But you were carrying your top coat over your arm.
I see.
That meant you got caught in the rain without your coat when you went out the first time. Your plan was to make a departure, then sneak back and kill Pinto, which you did. You also picked up your top coat. That's what tipped your hand when you came back the second time. Only it took me until now to put the pieces together.
Rather neat. Now Wait. Wait, that's a police car ahead of us. Turn around, quickly.
Okay.
Now back the way we came to the first turn right, then. No, it's another police car.
What do you know?
Slow down, I'm getting out.
You're not leaving, John.
Let go my wrist.
Let go of the gun. Drop it or your wrist goes with it.
No,
but you're hard to convince. Now just sit back and we'll wait for our friends, the police.
But how could they follow us? How did they know where we were?
Real simple, Johns. This is a police car, remember? When I reached down to start the car, I also flipped the radio switch. We've been on the air all this time.
The radio?
Yep. You sang plenty. And that's how you got the business. Matter of fact, you might call it a singing commercial.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell. This is a Grace Gibson radio production directed by Lawrence H. Cecil.
Dangerous Assignment, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC Network production released in 1953. And that wraps up this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for listening.